Hello, and welcome to Vanguard Audiobooks and the Learning College. I'm Alex Linder, and you can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com and also at alexlinder.com eventually as a permanent archive. We probably have a dozen, 12 to 15 there right now, and many more than that still at VNN Forum. Today we're going to conclude Chapter 9 of James Mason's Siege, which is the end of the text itself, except for the appendices, which we'll also be doing. There's maybe three or four of those. So 9.28 through 9.35, and about the usual length, about 20 pages. Page 467 through 488. So it'll take about an hour. 9.28, right or wrong? It is claimed there exists an old German saying that goes to the effect, right or wrong, my country. As National Socialists and as revolutionaries, we might tend to take several issues against that, primarily that it is far too narrow a concept. But it evokes a thought that, when properly applied as well as defined, holds true in this modern-day struggle we are caught up in. A better adjustment of that sentiment might go, right or wrong, my ass. Once someone has fully come to identify himself as one and the same, inseparable with the cause of the revolution, then he'd better arrive at about the same time at the ultimate conclusion that he is simply above all considerations of right, wrong, good, bad, legal or illegal, moral or immoral. He is simply what he is, and it is imperative that he not only continue, but that he prosper mightily, that is, if the higher goal is to be achieved. A large step in historic development is when an idea stops drifting through the air and comes to settle in, focus upon, or take the form of actual living, breathing personalities. Only then can it hope to take the lead and begin to conquer. These personalities must, first of all, know who they are, get over any fear of that realization, get comfortable and adjusted to the fact, then become super conscious of it and aware of the tremendous responsibility they have to themselves, the living embodiment of the movement itself. They are not like the rest of the people. You do what you have to do at all times. You do what you want to do whenever you are able. It is expected that these things will run you into difficulties, and not just on rare occasions, if your tastes have no place in the run of the mill. But you proceed in spite, because to do otherwise is to voluntarily hem yourself in and stifle the raw revolutionary spirit within yourself that demands freedom to develop to its fullest potential. As Nietzsche would say, you are out on a rope. The rope stretches between the Superman and the animal. There can be no going back, and beyond that, the rope stretches over an abyss. You keep going forward, or you die in the attempt. This has to do with your preventing, at all cost, your dying in the attempt. When beliefs, convictions, or lifestyles run you into direct conflict with personalities or agencies representing the system, there must never be any question. It is you who must prevail. Perhaps their laws have been violated, their moral code stepped on. It matters not. You cannot allow yourself to be stopped or undone for any reason. Whether the conflict involves a known adversary, such as the system itself, whether it involves perfect strangers, or whether it involves friends, loved ones, or even blood relatives, the situation remains unaltered. It is you who must say or do whatever has to be said or done in order to win, to survive, to prevail. As Hitler once said, you must close your hearts to pity. Many times this is easier done on a grand scale than on an individual scale, but it must be done nonetheless. Simply visualize yourself in the position of the vanquished and try to imagine the pity you'd receive. Let there be no backpedaling once an issue is struck, no attempted explanation, no equivocation, no compromise, no remorse. Only see to it that you, as representative of the cause, win out, regardless who gets hurt. Volume 13, Number 7, July 1984. Just win, baby, as Al Davis said, though he was a Jew. 929 Rules That No Longer Apply. A communist revolutionary during any point in time from the start of the International until about the mid-60s would have been accurately described as a subversive. A National Socialist revolutionary in the present day could not be so described. Why? The same communist today could no longer be called a subversive either. Why? Codes of morals and civilization centuries old, which were fanatically and violently defended by the American Nazi Party of 20 years ago, which were bitterly cursed and defamed by the communists of the same period, suddenly are found to be no longer valid. How can this be? Are we to be found guilty of the identical communist ploy of arbitrarily switching the, quote, party line as it suits opportunity? No. The communists of old Russia, of the early years of the International, might have, I say might have, been actual revolutionaries. The primary reason for this was that the system they sought to overthrow was not only in total opposition to their program, but it did not cooperate with them in its own destruction. That has not been the case in recent decades with other communist parties. Today, the only ones finding themselves in that kind of position of absoluteness are ourselves. Our only opportunity, quote-unquote, lies in being in complete tune with the reality of the present moment and keeping our program and our strategy in accord with this. And this is neither opportunism nor is it double talk. It is an error to state that the communists won, or if they took over, it is only because a morally bankrupt society, that of the entire West, allowed them to. How early in the game was it said that communism was no more than, quote, democracy in a hurry, or liberalism in a hurry, is what I've seen before. It was more than could have been asked to expect solid, decent white Americans to take up arms against their own laws, religion, and government, indeed their entire way of life, back in the 50s. When an astute mind could have known, as some certainly did know, that this all was on a one-way ride out, even in the midst of so much outwardly apparent strength and prosperity. Why, to have done that then would have been communist. And so the ground which most of us today sprang from was in the beginning very solidly conservative ground, that of those who sought to shore the situation all up, albeit in a modified turn-the-clock-back form. That fell flat for various reasons, but all of these are pointless reasons because that which had been the object and the point of the whole crusade disintegrated and poured right through our fingers. That is no more than what occurs when terminal rot sets in. You may say that life goes on. Who are all those people out there? What are they doing and what keeps them together? A revolutionary won't be deceived by apparent signs of life. An economic system, together with strict laws protecting the rights of those with money to hang on to it and keep on accumulating it. That which passes as government is a Frankenstein experiment with millions of hapless, unaware souls as guinea pigs. Liberal, egalitarian, and democratic theories, which have no basis in fact or reality, but which, by order of decree of a handful of insane minds, shall be made to run their course, backed up by the system's billions of dollars, not to mention their armies of pigs, add fuel to the flames of further disintegration. This carries all of the laws, all of the institutions, all of the traditions, all of which were held sacred by our own people for the past 1,000 or more years, right down with it. Law and order is a thing devised by a people and then made the responsibility of the government for the furtherance and protection of the people. But in the present case, as any well-versed right-winger can tell you at great length, aliens have long since infiltrated, ruined, and spoiled it all, taken over the laws we made for us, for our kind. They have so twisted and perverted the meaning as a means toward their takeover that none of it is any longer salvageable. It has the stench and taint of death upon it. We as a people must start anew. We must reform everything on our own if we are to survive. Our position is lonely and unenviable. We live at a time in history when the civilization around us is rapidly collapsing. To be accurate, it has already died. It died when its moral decay, together with its infiltration by hostile aliens, rendered it hollow and meaningless, counter to the interests of the very people who first made it. So I would call that revolution within the form, as I've said many times, the Zelensky cheap inferior parts in the Callahan noble Aryan first-rate box. And since people don't pay close attention, you can fool them and sell them shit as actual shinola. Shinola is valuable. Shit is not valuable. Not actually sure what shinola is. Some kind of linoleum or something like that, I think. To be perfectly accurate, it has been in a state of decomposition now for about 20 or 30 years, as it is impossible to put a finger on the exact time the final flicker of life passed out of it. Our position is not one where we can expect at any time in the near future to destroy them, but rather to avoid them and thus prevent them from destroying us. No conventional organizations of revolution or counter-revolution are possible here today. As veterans of this struggle are aware, this is not because of any sudden lost war or classic-style coup d'etat. Rather, it is because of such supremely insidious things as comfort, corruption, mass opinion control, along with the rest of the cancer at the core of this civilization. It is clear to those not any longer caught up in a game playing as sport or distraction that none of it is worth anything. All of it is garbage. All of it is useless. And when you live by what is useless and what is garbage, then you are the pawn and the fool of those in control, for they are under no such illusions. They live for whatever material pleasure and obscene proportions that the money they wring from the dumb workers through the means of their system can purchase. To be a man, a person, an individual, to be someone in some degree of control and mastery over their lives, their own destinies and futures, it is necessary that you struggle hard and shed, quote, that which you have been taught. If you were an older person and what you were brought up on had meaning back then I assure you that the meaning now lives only in your memory and not in reality. If you are a younger person, then what you have been taught and what you are being taught is pure uncut lies and poison. In both cases, it is necessary that you start at once to think for yourself, if you have the ability and the instincts, not to mention the courage, left to do so. Life, health, human happiness, and future all depend on it. Pull away, draw away from the march of doom. Keep to yourselves. Live by primal animal laws. To hell with what others may think or expect. To hell with opinion. Go forth in your daily life in anonymity in order to do what you have to do to sustain yourself. In your private dealings, never invite the system to invade and attack and thus destroy you. Dig the groundwork for a new world, the new civilization now, today, starting with yourself and those immediately around you. Above all, do nothing to needlessly immolate yourself in your efforts. This tragedy of all tragedies must not occur, and least of all, due to the presence within ourselves of any allegiance to rules that no longer apply. Volume 13, Number 8, August 1984. 9:30, Balance. No one could have seen or known, back at the time, the current movement in the U.S. was being formed, but the earliest groundbreakers in this were going about things backward or inside out. During the 1950s, the end had occurred only yesterday, and the maggots were only then beginning to crawl openly over the corpse of the U.S. and the West. Some suspected the whole thing was already dead, but most simply refused to see it. A few, like Commander Rockwell, suspected it, but knew nothing else but to fight it, reverse it if possible, but at all cost go down like men with honor. Indeed, it's been a downhill drag ever since. We can't go back and we can't erase the past. It is useless to speculate whether we'd be any better or worse off if we just sat back 20 or 30 years ago and contemplated ourselves and our circumstances. When one stops to consider what, if any, good has come out of all the sacrificial, thankless effort of the past 3 decades, then the answer becomes pretty clear. Still, we did only what we felt we had to do. Personally, I'm sorry for nothing. Today, the situation is different. For all the lessons I have been learned, all the mistakes have been made, I, for one, will not go on repeating any of them. I've said often enough in the past to forget all the notions that you, your particular group, or the movement as a whole is reaching anything remotely approaching the masses with their message. If you can come to terms with that realization, you will begin to think more realistically. When you understand that, then you will know that the time for such things as parties, uniforms, or anything of an official nature with pretenses to actual power, either state or private, is either past or has not yet arrived. Take your pick. This does not mean, nor will it ever mean, that we need to or should ever deny our greatest heroes, just as Commander Rockwell warned against, but just as with everything else in human dealings, there is a correct time, place, and method of broaching any subject, especially any highly profound or sensitive subject. People get to know me first. While they're getting to know me, they're getting to know Hitler and National Socialism, because I am inseparable from these and do nothing to try and hide any of it. It's just that I don't wear any of it on my sleeve, as it were, save for my reputation, which is pretty alive and lively in this little town. I try always to live and conduct myself in such a manner that the only ones who will take an active dislike to me are the blind, quote, haters and bigots, to borrow 2 favorite blurbs. As Dr. William Pierce once pointed out to the movement in one of his publications, we should each think of ourselves and conduct ourselves as though we were ambassadors of our race. And, I would add, as ambassadors of our movement. Not as fanatics, and not as high-pressure salesmen. This ties directly with personal loyalties when thinking in terms of building up local cells. But people and personalities first, all other considerations later. If you don't do this, then I positively guarantee you failure and misery. Take care of yourself first, get your own thinking and lifestyle squared away before trying to tackle anyone else's or the world's. Get yourself together before ever attempting to lead others or accepting that kind of responsibility. Otherwise, you could be inviting a hurricane down on your head. Build on a foundation, not several feet off the ground, up in thin air like the majority. Make yourself and your lifestyle, your surroundings, and even the people closest around you reflect things the way our idea calls for. Then people will get to know you and, as in the case around here, when they comment on Hitler, or Manson for that matter, their words will be to the effect, "And I thought Hitler was supposed to be so terrible." Don't play it stupid and reinforce the Jewish system lies about the greatest man to have ever lived. Lead the kind of life he would want you to be living under today's circumstances, as carefully outlined and demonstrated by Manson, and utterly destroy all the lies and untruth. This is but an example of balance at work. Balance is a big and often employed word in the Manson vocabulary. How well do I recall how frequently we in the movement would privately refer to one another as being unbalanced during the past when all that dashing about was taken dead seriously? But weren't we all doing about the same thing in the same way? The paramount importance of balance is reflected in the universal order symbol suggested by Manson himself. In a word, the problem in the world is that it is badly out of balance. Apply it to the 3% of Jews running the show over the rest, or apply it to anything else, and it boils down the same way. But that is language that doesn't throw up mental barricades or trigger enemy brainwashing, conditioning, etc. Plus, it is broad enough to take it all in and represent something legitimately ideological rather than peripheral, such as traditional anti-Semitism or radical right-wingism. Get yourself into balance first. That's a large enough task. The rest will come easier. A people in balance and harmony just aren't susceptible to things like miscegenation or illnesses of liberalism or democracy. Right now, they're going mad in search of what's missing and are going in the opposite extreme of imbalance, trying to find it vainly. How the Jews do roar with laughter. Aren't any of you in the least bit motivated or capable of wiping that smirk off the Jews' face? Open your minds. That was Volume 13, Number 8, August 1984. 9.31, The Sake of Argument. Those who have been around steady and can recall some of the thick and slick movement publications I have edited in the past may have had occasion to ask themselves why I didn't just stick with a nice, safe, cut-and-dried right-wing approach to my editorial line instead of scaring the hell out of every publisher I've ever worked with. It might appear that I had towed a well-trod line 10 years ago. At least one of those big expensive magazines, which were printed in the thousands, might still be currently in print. Think again. For one, those magazines were intended to weld together scattered elements of the American Nazi Party, which were active locally, but lacking any real organization, and certainly lacking any decent publications through which to represent themselves to the movement and that part of the public as might have been interested, and thus to recruit with. Today there is not enough of that kind of activity going on with which even to attempt to, quote, fake it, as one diehard movement tabloid is still trying to do with little success. So between the two, the Phase 1 handstand activities and my revolutionary editorializing that went into those early magazines, which one is still with us and in abundance enough to keep a regular publication coming out? In whatever economized form. For another, those splintered, isolated, flake-away units, regardless what anyone tried to do for them, proved constitutionally unable of either pretending to be or of acting sane, and because they couldn't handle the real enemy, chose instead to attack friends. Perfect candidates for a Where Are They Now column in an Anti-Defamation League newspaper. But they were hot at the time and certainly knew it all. For another, right alongside their handstanding and skokieing for the enemy press, as their follow-up toward building a political machine, they had all the arguments nicely sewed up, packaged, and ready for marketing. Propaganda, I guess they thought of it as. A the truth will make you free sort of mentality. Of course, it didn't work. They never dared figure that no one gave a damn except hopeless, helpless, funky right-wing types who, in the depths of their misery and failure, sought to ease the pain somewhat by telling themselves and each other that they were, after all, in the right. No one was ever able to successfully take that to the bank with the inhuman, stone-faced enemy firmly lodged in all places of power. Somehow, he didn't give too much of a damn either, then or now. I could and still can write that kind of crap practically in my sleep, certainly without any benefit of reference. It's the stuff I was weaned on. After I would get my message with some meaning out of the way, I would add all the editorial comment, propaganda, and big build-up as necessary to the news clipism articles and features which were submitted by publishers of those magazines and tabloids, and I would get praise for it. How right we are was the underlying theme of it all. But when it was going nowhere, when those publishers couldn't see that it was going nowhere, and especially when I began explaining why it was getting nowhere, they each in turn balked and ran. So here I am today with Siege and these contents. Nothing too fancy, but nonetheless competitive. I'm completely satisfied that I am doing the most that can be done at present, which lies outside the bounds of foolhardy and futile sacrifice. But it remains for me to explain, for the first time, why I reject the philosophy of argument as any sort of strategy toward destroying enemy power or building up our own. Why he rejects the philosophy of argument, in quotes. I grew up with the saying, never argue with fools or drunks. Joseph Tomasi said words to the effect, the weapon of criticism will never equal the criticism of weapons. The weapon of criticism will never equal the criticism of weapons. We prefer a paralyzed enemy to a well-criticized one. He also said that we would never make our most eloquent statements in courtrooms, etc., but in the streets of scum-ridden America. Very basically, it remains a call to action. As great and effective a propagandist as Commander Rockwell was, the same call to action that he himself never tired of repeating. Beyond that, you'll never talk anybody out of anything. Not really anything of value. Not anything of value. And the enemy values his power, while the rest of the system clones, big and little, value their corners and dung heap pieces of that same action, which they are kindly granted, so long as they think, say, or do nothing to rock the boat. People who were regular and active with the party during the 60s and early 70s, when things were brisk in that department, got to be experts in semantics. Besides that, they got to be experts at having their facts at their fingertips and making certain that those facts were straight. We were good at what we did. We demonstrated well, and when confronted by those determined against us, we fought well. We represented ourselves well in written and oral propaganda, and when, quote, debated or verbally confronted by those whose worldview was opposed to ours, we fenced most admirably. But so what if you keep a mob of dirtbags who outnumber you 100-1 from running you out of if that tiny victory exists in the midst of a dirtbag ocean? So what if 1 or 100 liberated zombies, or some redneck asshole for that matter, are unable to pin you at any point during a heated repartee if that one success occurs in a zombie or asshole universe? One essence of genius is the ability to be concise in all matters, to cut all the crap and get straight to the core of any issue. Out in a park or in a bar, that will certainly start a fight. But the alternative is to hedge around with all kinds of little sideshows of reason and comparison. Besides, anyone can say, to hell with you, my way is the only right way. Now that's getting to the bottom of it fast. And no matter what facts or logic you may offer up, somebody in every crowd is going to be able to come up with some nonsense that will obscure or offset the point being made so that the whole effort is wasted. But that is what debate and argument are made of. They are designed and intended to reach into the infinite, and that is certainly not what we want. We are not in the business of matching beliefs with anyone or blabbing about whether our race or theirs is going to be around in the next 1,000 years. Facts are one thing, but beliefs and survival are another. I'll match facts with anyone for the hell of it, as a game, all day and all night. But I must admit to you readers here and now that I have no tolerance for anyone else's beliefs. That is, presuming they have anything that could legitimately be described as a belief. National Socialism is it, and it is my business to see that it prevails. With the facts, in spite of the facts, or right over the top of the heads of them, if necessary. Of course, I know we are right, especially after all those years of intense study and debate, etc., so it is not as though I'm a blind bigot. It's just that I am through talking with the ignorant, and especially with the enemy. Ignorance is something I really have no tolerance for, and that goes double when it is wrapped in a thick coating of conceit. It turns out most of the time when dealing with these people nowadays that whatever label they may attach to their personal beliefs, ranging from Christianity to democracy, etc., ignorance is the proper name for it all. And even the Bible cautioned against casting pearls before swine. They are in the business of scratching out a living. I am in the business of politics and revolution. Do I argue with them? They're going to be doing exactly what they are now, regardless who or what is in power, and that is eking it out. One of the magical formulas of that black magician, Charles Manson, calls for dealing a positive death blow to any and all forms of bullshit by letting it die where it falls, by not keeping it alive or amplifying it through stepping in and batting it back and forth as though it has some seriousness, meaning, or worth to it, by letting it die as it falls out of the mouth of the sayer or as soon as the page it has been printed on hits the air. Let it die. Let it die and go on about what it is you are doing. And what else has the right wing been doing its entire lifetime, the right wing, other than batting around and amplifying the poison and the garbage conceived and put forth by the Jewish system? No, at whatever the cost, I prefer to go on saying that which has been unsaid, that which has not been bounced off a Jewish or system sounding board. If it bothers or upsets, then the upsettee has evidently just had an area touched or opened up that hitherto he was unaware even existed. Better take a closer look into it and start cultivating it now. And the footnote there was on the Skokieism. Skokieism was a reference to the late 70s controversy when the Nazi group in Chicago applied for permits to march in Skokie, a suburb of Chicago, predominantly inhabited by, quote, Holocaust survivors. So that selection was Volume 13, Number 9, September 1984. Indecent Liberties. Anyone honest with themselves will be aware that indecent liberties are perhaps the best liberties of all with regard to human fulfillment and gratification. A person who will deny this is either a conscious liar or a tragically repressed victim of an obsolescent, uptight, anti-nature, and anti-life morality. A person who goes about at large broadcasting his own indecent liberties in detail is a reckless fool, begging for the roof to cave in on him, for such are the laws on the books, and such is the hypocritical society which still pays them lip service, and still pays taxes for goons to enforce those laws. Don't we all know that, quote, everybody hates blacks? A person who says they do not is either a rotted-out liberal, or they are a liar in the form of an utter and complete moral coward. What of those that shout it to the world? It may require certain guts to do so, but that individual is still a fool, for he is inviting his own detriment. For again, such is the sick law of this sick land, and such is the herd, follow the leader mentality of the swine that populate the place. It may be even be their own inner personal feeling, but they'll watch you be hanged and never say a peep. The parallels could go on and on, but the important point I'm trying to make is that one of the biggest dividers between classifications of human stuff and the quality thereof is found in their ability to, first, know themselves, second, accept themselves, and finally, to be able to do something with it or about it in an intelligent way. I really agree with that. And one reason I don't like to deal with a lot of people is I don't feel they can or do introspect. They do not know themselves, and they don't know what they're about. And thus, if you don't know yourself, then what do you know? What you know comes to you not from introspection, not internally, not from objective consideration of who you are and what you do, but it must be something supplied externally, and we all know where that crap comes from. You're someone else's parrot, and you're a parrot who believes what you're saying. You know, you're just repeating something you've heard from the outside. Maybe that's how it has to be for most people, but that's why most people are probably better avoided. Know yourself, accept yourself, and be able to do something about it in an intelligent way, he says. There is no such thing as a free man who is not in touch with himself, and the self is the animal. No one has got his feet in the ground if he is not tuned into himself, if he cannot or will not use his brain, allow his brain to accept and articulate his animal instincts. Most have been taught, and have accepted the teaching, to use their own brain to repress themselves and to conform to some artificial alien set of moral codes and expected behavior. A slave is one who is not even honest with himself. a revolutionary, albeit a repressed revolutionary who is aware of a hostile environment, has established a working rapport with himself between his instincts and his intellect. He knows there's something wrong there. A citizen of a healthy society is one who can go about in complete openness, total harmony and honesty among his fellows, and, as anyone can see, we are far removed from anything resembling that idea. A healthy society would, among other things, be free from alcoholism, drugism, pornography, suicide, and all other forms of artificial hype and escapism. It's been often enough discussed what and what not to do with the beliefs you already have come to accept. What hasn't been touched on is how to unshackle your own mind and be free of whatever amount of tired old useless garbage as may still be present there. Fears and hang-ups only come in when there is no communication within oneself. Fears are just black spots or holes in a dark area of the mind where certain, quote, teachings are kept because animals, not having an intellect to speak of, are well known nonetheless for their capacity for being trained. Humans, through the use of their rational intellect, should be able to unravel and throw off any such teaching as it's found to be of an alien, hurtful nature, and free the instinct so that it may run true. Anton Sandor LaVey, Satanist guy, once pointed out that never shall the minds of those be terrorized who know and believe in what is best for them. To me, a spooky, easily frightened, shaky, reluctant, flaky person is the saddest, most disgusting thing around. Just look like looking at an animal with its tail tucked between its legs and shivering at the mere thought of its master's rolled-up newspaper. Most people today are just like this. They're not worthy of liberty because not only can't they handle it, they haven't got the guts to take it and hold it. Give me the type of individual who will take, quote, master's fucking leg off, or to borrow from Commander Rockwell's simile of the horse and the leader, stomp his brains out. Persons not honest with themselves can't be honest with you, and vice versa. You can't trust them. You can't deal with them. A person who can't, in their own brain, examine and pick apart contemporary convention, retain or discard those parts which may or may not be useful or advantageous to him, or if need be create new rules of his own as he goes along, is definitely not material for the future. So what if this or that is universally cursed or condemned? Does it benefit you, further your cause, or otherwise make your life more pleasant? The rule book is coated with thick, flaking mildew, and it is common knowledge that the pig system will gleefully crack down on anything which moves and steps outside master's rules. So what? Use your intellect and your instinct to make your own new rules. Use your skill and your cunning to circumvent the system and the pigs at every step. A person 100% in touch with himself is largely free of fear. He is inwardly reinforced and is generally out of danger of one common result whenever a head-on encounter of a hostile nature with the system occurs, one in which we in the movement have observed plenty of times, but which was left up to Charles Manson to define. We've seen too many of them, quote, bug out under stress or other hardship, or maybe after a prolonged lack of any, quote, fun or action. What they are doing in reality is simply going back to where they were, reverting to the core that was never changed, only glazed over by an act of pretenses. Kidding oneself is every bit as dangerous as refusing to acknowledge oneself, maybe worse. The kind of person who would never think about taking an indecent liberty is someone we can be sure would never have anything to do with us. The person who takes them now and then, but who puts up a moralistic front, is the kind who is in the majority, who slips us a donation or who signs up secretly and subscribes to our publications only, the kind who displays no sense at all about what he does, we want to stay strictly away from for our own safety. But the kind of individual who is aware that all set rules are trash, who is aware that opinion and, quote, law enforcement are merely pitfalls to be prudently avoided, certainly not respected, and who has the maturity and inner strength to blaze his own path and make his own morality, is unquestionably the kind of person we seek, or else should seek to become. That was Volume 13, Number 9, September 1984. 9.33. The Now. I've run into discussions of a concept that's been referred to as the now lately in movement newsletters. I'm all in favor of the movement becoming familiar with this idea, as it is an important one, but I want it made certain that it is known that this originated with Charles Manson. I predicted years ago that Manson's ideas would invade all areas of movement thought, and they have and are continuing to do so. But, being of the Rockwell School, I believe in giving credit where it is due. First of all, I personally would never have any tolerance for any hippie jargon, as the system calls it, just as I have none for the superstitious garbage. The terms are, quote, new, mainly for purposes of emphasis and clarity, because the older terms have been rendered cliché and stand for things which are threadbare. Manson was required to practically reinvent the language in order to get his points across. I assure you, his concepts are quite real and valid. Basically, it is this. The great majority of people live in a mental world split between the past and the future. Few live life. Instead, they are, quote, starring in their own movie, to quote Manson. But the, quote, past and the, quote, future exist nowhere but in the mind, or on film or record, or on paper as fiction. The one is gone and the other hasn't yet taken place. We exist in the now, whether we like it or not. And the now is all we've really got. No wonder why such a tiny few are in such total control of the present. Most others are off somewhere else. All true revolutionaries will be found within this arena, center stage, right along with the system taskmasters themselves, because only here can the struggle for command of the fate of the world be decided. Some of the religionists in the past have made the statement that, quote, we are on a victory march. Blind faith leads them to kid themselves and bluff, or try to bluff, others. I doubt that they knew what they were talking about. I happen to know one thing. I, for one, am in the now, and nearly 20 years of the most bitter experience has made me more than the equal of any system wire puller. I don't know how much company I've got, but I do know that it is only a matter of further disruption of the inertia behind the system, coupled with the increased exertion of will on our part, and the balance is swung. Where it is fundamental, we've already won, at least around these parts. Our job is to let them know they have been broken, and by whom. Volume 14, Number 6, June 1985. 9.34, Staying One Up. The philosophy behind this would indeed make the kind of epitaph each of us should want to have inscribed over our graves. Quote, he died one up in the system. Even the worst flunkies and pretenders in the movement sometimes have their movements as well, their moments as well. It happened to be one of them that first crystallized the concept of getting and keeping, quote, one up at all times against the system, so that if you're ever successfully taken out by the system, you may be able to go out not with a sense of loss or defeat, but instead with a very real sense of unter habt doch gesiegt, and you have yet one of having been victorious in spite. This has always, since the end of the war, been a struggle for the self, an inner struggle primarily. First myself, and then the world. It is just that only now are we becoming more aware of it. When your moment comes, if you have been successful and done your utmost, probably it will be best known only by just you. Inner satisfaction, as opposed to fanfare. If it were otherwise, your score undoubtedly would have been cut short a lot sooner. You'll be able to go out like a man, prima donna types will always go out kicking and squealing, protesting their innocence and their rights to a system that cares only to be able to get its meat hooks on an opponent who has provided it with a chance to do so through a careless mistake. The system is so vast, so complex, so inhuman, that sporadic, isolated assaults against it do less to harm it, actually, than a far-flung community of committed revolutionists living and functioning as an entity unto themselves. The real attack is a fully aware individual in this day and age who lives his deepest convictions, actually puts them to work. What an attack! In the face of what could be a dictionary definition of hopelessness, individuals grimly and quietly working against it, for themselves, despite all, to, quote, drop out of it and go on managing for yourself and for its destruction, quietly, year after year, decade after decade, successfully unmolested, what a victory. And then to have gotten in your real jabs, to have drawn real blood, besides, no one can ask more than that under these circumstances. Aside from being ready for death at any time, such a life's conduct will allow one to be able to accept and to cheerfully write off any tactical losses or setbacks that will inevitably arise in due course. To play against impossible odds and to keep accounts in your favor is the victory. Volume 14, Number 10, October 1985. The course. I want to speak more clearly than I have before in previous segments of Siege on this topic. There are but two separate choices as regards strategies and courses of action for any who consider themselves members of the movement. Total attack or total dropout. These are the opposite ends of the revolutionary spectrum. While the former is the more blazing and heroic, it is the latter, by far, that I favor and would urge all comrades to adopt. I favor the latter as the only sane and realistic choice. Charles Manson was and is the master of this philosophy. We're talking about survival versus suicide. Manson would tell us that suicide is the lot of the system. Let ours be survival. Never forget that violent revolution may come as a result of a policy of total dropout. If it is carried out effectively. But should violent revolution come and find us not already highly adept dropouts, then it will spell our own deaths as well. Next, if you cannot make revolution in your own mind, in your daily habits and life, then you certainly cannot do it in any other way. This is why Manson scoffs at the so-called movement badasses and why they in turn scorn him because he, quote, undresses them with his eyes. There's no use actually talking about it unless you've actually done it. I have done it. I advocate more of what I have done and am still doing and take no stupid risks to jeopardize it. It seems too many want what no one has done, can, or should do. And to think you can change the system within the system is bullshit. There are probably a lot more things I'd be ready to do without the bat of an eye than the average movement member. Some people are born without arms or legs, etc. I was born without any compunctions. If it feels good, do it. If it gets you to where you want to go, use it. And by the same token, if it's counterproductive, drop it. You must drop out of and away from the system. Mentally, spiritually, physically, economically. Since I do not advocate becoming hermits and living in caves, but do strongly advocate living well, then it amounts to a matter of short-circuiting your relationship with the system. A highly disproportionate amount of it coming your way, only very grudgingly give anything to the system, except in the cases of outright, naked, and inescapable blood money. I.e. certain kinds of taxes, etc., and only then in the silent and satisfying knowledge that you'll be retaking that, plus some more, over the near future. One step backward and two steps forward. Remember, in all of your unavoidable intercourses with the system, make sure that you are the and not the E. There are many things I won't be delving into as regards the revolutionary's relationship with the system, but one of the most important would, however, be to never take anything seriously at all other than that which threatens to directly, materially affect you. And that cuts out so very much and clears away so much time, thought, and resources with which to be ready to keep the wolves away from the door. Their phony garbage, elections, world affairs, economy, education, crime, the lot of it, pull away from it all and let it go to hell. Start now getting ready to survive the demise of the system. You may actually be contributing to that demise. Begin breaking away gradually, but on a steady program. Call no attention to yourself. Say nothing. Just act. That's Volume 15, Number 6, June 1986, and in parentheses, this was the final issue of Seed, so that's where he left it. Basically, he went through the entire formal movement, such as it was in the late 60s and 70s, and he learned a lot. He respected some of the leaders, Tomasi and George Lincoln Rockwell principally, and Hitler was his number one. But ultimately, he decided to go his own way and focus on himself, and that seemed the most reasonable thing to do at the time. Of course, this is before the decade before the internet goes mainstream when he's producing his last newsletter there. I'm not sure what has happened to him, if he's still alive, or what further happened. Would be interesting to know. Anyway, that's it for this segment. And as I said, that does conclude the text proper. And then we have 10, 11, 12, and 13 appendices, which I will also make audio of. So thanks for being with me today. And I'll be back with you again real soon.